Hey guys, my name is Annie and welcome to my channel, 10 to Life, where I'm bringing you full true crime cases in under 10 minutes. No more boring storylines or empty plots, just the key details, the insane facts, and all of the unexpected twists that we know happen along the way. I'm coming to you directly from my apartment in Brooklyn, New York, which if you're watching this on my YouTube channel, you can see beautiful New York behind me. And if you're listening to the podcast version of this, but you want to check out the video, head on over to my YouTube channel. And if you like what you hear, please like, comment, share, review, and don't forget to subscribe to my channel by clicking on that cute little subscribe button. Follow me on social at underscore Annie Elise, and let's jump into the case. Hey guys, so before we jump into today's case, I just wanna say the state is reopening here in New York. Restrictions are being lifted. It is a beautiful day. I finally was able to get my regrowth done. Thank God. Because trying to be a platinum blonde in the middle of a quarantine is no easy feat. Let me tell you. I hope you guys are all continuing to stay safe as restrictions are lifted and things are reopening, and let's jump right in. Today we are going to be talking about a very well-known case and somebody we all know. It's a household name, Chris Watts. However, as I was researching this case this week to get all of the details in line, I started going down the rabbit hole trying to research, okay, what do I not know about? What can I dig up? What's the newest update and information? And oh my God, I uncovered so much detail. So not only are we gonna go over the Chris Watts case in detail, but I'm gonna give you this new information that I discovered, which is insane. Let's kick it off with the very beginning. Chris and Shanann met in 2010 and married in 2012. They lived in Colorado and they had two little girls, Bella, who was 4 years old, and Celeste, who's 3 years old. They had a picture-perfect marriage. Shanann was very active on social media and posted videos all of the time of them as a family, singing, happy, joking around together. She even posted a video about how she and Chris met and how he slid into her DMs and friend requested her on Facebook years ago, how she didn't think anything of it, and then bam, now here they are, and they're married, and they have two kids. So really, from the outside, a perfect love story. But things aren't always what they seem, are they? On August 13th, 2018, Shanann returned home from a business trip in Arizona, and Chris was at home with the girls. It was a solo work trip for her, and she came home about 1:45 a.m. The next morning, a colleague of hers became concerned because Shanann had missed an OB appointment, and she was 15 weeks pregnant. She also was failing to return any text messages, and this was very much unlike Shanann. So her friend went to Shanann's house at noon to check in to make sure everything's okay, maybe she overslept, and no answer. She ends up calling Chris, and before even asking Chris to notify the police, she just takes it upon herself because she knew it was so out of character for Shanann that she's like, no, I'm calling the police, something's going on here. At 1:40 p.m., an officer arrived to do a welfare check, and Chris was now back at the house at this point as well, and Chris allowed the officer to come in, search for information, see what he could find, anything to determine, okay, where is Shanann and our two little girls? None of the family was found, and police found her purse, her wedding ring on the bed, her car was there, which still had the girls' car seats in it, and her cell phone, which was in her purse. Very unlike her, everything is showing that she should have been at the house because all of her belongings were still there and the girls' belongings. So where was this family? The next day, the FBI joined the investigation, and Chris gives this huge interview on the news, pleading for them to come home for their safe return, just an outpouring of love and support from the community, trying to find his pregnant wife and their two little girls.
Had every light in the house on. I was hoping that I would just get just ran over by the kids running in the door and just like barrel rushing me, but it didn't happen. And it was just a traumatic night trying to be here. I just want them to come back.
As the police are doing their investigation on the property and around the neighborhood, a neighbor comes out and says, you know what, I've actually got video cameras on my property. Do you want to come in and take a look? They're always recording and maybe I caught something. So officers are like, of course, yeah, let's go take a look. And Chris comes along as well because he of course wants to see what it is. As the officer, the neighbor, and Chris are inside the neighbor's house watching this footage, Chris's behavior starts to become very concerning. The footage shows Chris backing his truck up in the middle of the night into the garage, and he quickly starts getting fidgety, trying to explain it away, saying how there's been a string of break-ins recently, all of these things, but just his behavior, you can see he's just moving and twitching and he can't sit still. Once the footage is over, the officer and Chris go to leave the house and the neighbor pulls the officer back and says, hey, he's not acting right, because the neighbor knew something was up with his behavior and he said, he's usually cool, calm, collected, he isn't acting right, something's up.
Here's info real quick.
Which immediately, of course, piqued the interest of the police officers. The police bring Chris in for questioning, which they so often do with spouses, and they also ask him to take a polygraph test, which he fails. So after he fails, they really start pressing him. What was going on in the marriage? Were you guys fighting? And as they continue to push, Chris finally admits that he was having an affair. He says, "It was just an affair. It didn't mean anything. I love my wife. I would never be involved in something like this. I would never hurt my children," and just keeps denying, denying, denying. Then the officers, very, very smart officers, decide, you know what? We're gonna bait him a little bit. We're gonna see if we can give him just enough rope to hang himself. And that's what they did. They said, "Chris, look, you failed the polygraph. You were having an affair. Your stories aren't adding up. We have this footage of you backing your truck up into the garage in the middle of the night. Things aren't looking right, so just tell us the truth." And so they ask, "Did you see Shanann hurt the girls? And then did you go after her to try to retaliate?" Trying to bait him to see if there was some sort of justification for what he did. And it worked. And Chris says he saw Shanann strangle the girls on a baby monitor and kill them. And so in a fit of rage and retaliation, he jumps up on top of her and strangles her. And then he admits to disposing of all of the bodies, but again, says he was doing it simply because he saw Shanann murder the girls and he blew up and saw red and didn't know what came over him, and then he had to just clean everything up. Meanwhile, as this interview is going on, investigators learn that the truck he was driving was a work truck of his, which also happens to have GPS. His employer gave the police the GPS records, so as they were doing this interview, they were led out to an oil site, which is where Chris's truck went that morning. In the interview, they bring this picture of the oil site to Chris and they say, "Are the bodies here? Show me where they are." He points to two large oil tanks and says, "Each daughter is in one of the oil tanks." And then he points to the ground nearby and says, "Shanann, who remember was 15 weeks pregnant, Shanann and baby Nico, the unborn child, are buried there." He's immediately arrested on suspicion of 3 counts of first degree murder. The next morning on August 16th, the team goes out to the oil site to try to recover the bodies. This team had to climb into the oil tanks to retrieve these two little girls and then go to where pregnant Shanann was buried and dig her up. At this point, the affair comes out. Everybody knows Chris is guilty. He knows that this whole story of Shanann strangling the girls is never gonna fly and nobody's believing it. So his defense attorney proposes the idea of, you know what? Chris will plead guilty as long as you take the death penalty off the table. And a few short months later, on November 6th, they accept the plea deal and he pleads guilty. 2 weeks later is the sentencing and it is a media frenzy. Both families are there. Everybody's emotionally invested in this case. Chris is allowed the opportunity to speak and to address the room and address the court. He doesn't, like a coward. He gets sentenced 3 life sentences plus 86 years for the unlawful termination of their unborn child. 4 months later, out of nowhere, Chris reaches out to the original investigators and says, "You know what? I'm gonna answer your questions and I'm ready to speak." So they wanna take this opportunity and learn, okay, what was the truth? We know your story in the beginning was complete bullshit, but what really happened? He starts explaining to them that he's been a go with the flow kind of guy his entire life. He's never had a temper, that he and Shanann's marriage, there was never any sort of domestic violence, and that things were always happy. And then his story starts turning a little bit and he starts saying how he started to resent her because he hated being in all of these social media posts that she would do related back to her work, and that he supported her, so he did it, but that he really hated feeling like he was always put on stage. And he explains that's how the affair really started, and that when she got back from her work trip that night, she suspected something was going on. She initiated sex with him, and he says he did it, and he felt like it was a test to see if he really was cheating or not, and just that she really knew something was up. Then he explains how he told her that he doesn't love her anymore, he wanted a divorce, and in retaliation, she says, "Well, you will never see the girls again." And then he says it was that comment that sprung him into action, where he just jumped on top of her and started strangling her. But then as he's recounting all these events, he slips and he actually says he already had it in his mind that he was going to do it. So it wasn't something that just came over him in the heat of the moment. He knew that he was going to be doing this. He says he looks to the bedroom door and he sees 4-year-old Bella standing there. And she says, "What's wrong with mommy?" And he says, "She's just not feeling well." Then he carries the two little girls downstairs, loads them in the truck, brings Shanann's dead body into the truck, and they head for the oil site. When they get to the oil site, he says he takes 3-year-old Celeste's baby blanket and smothers her to death with it, all while Bella was watching. Then Bella turns to him and asks him, "Daddy, are you going to do the same thing you just did to Cece to me?" I mean, this is heartbreaking. She's a young girl, she's 4 years old, but she is aware of what's going on. He says that he takes the blanket and he does the same thing to Bella, and he says her last words were, "No, Daddy." He drops the two girls in the oil tanks, not even together, in 2 separate tanks, and he buries his pregnant wife in the shadows of the oil tanks in a dirt patch. This guy is a heartless sociopath. Now they finally have his true confession. The story is out there. People know what happened, so there can be some sort of level of closure. But sure enough, he starts talking again just a short time later. And this time, he unloads even more bombshells. As he's being interviewed, he says, "All I could feel was that at that moment, I was free to be with Nikki, his mistress." He says, "My feelings of love for her were so overwhelming, I felt no remorse." He goes on to say he was desperate for Nicole to bear his only son and hated the idea that Shanann was pregnant with their son, so before he killed her, he actually had tried to poison her to force a termination. And then he goes and recounts the morning of the murder, and he releases even more information that he didn't release before. And this time, it is even beyond what we all thought. He says on the morning of August 13th, before he even had this argument with Shanann or told her that he wasn't in love with her anymore, he went over to the girls' bedroom. He says he used a pillow from their beds to smother them and kill them. After he left the girls' room, he climbed back into bed with Shanann, and that's when the argument started. After he murdered Shanann, he looked to the bedroom door and he saw little Bella standing there, which is true because he even said this in his earlier confession. However, he said, "I didn't know how she was standing there alive. I had just killed her and Cece. Their eyes were bruised and looked as though they had just been through some kind of trauma, and I knew I had failed and I had to do it again." What? By the grace of God, your two little girls just survived this horrific attempted murder. He goes on to say he threw Shanann's body into the shallow hole that he dug for her, and she landed face down, but that at that point he hated her so much he wasn't gonna bother flipping her over. This guy is so disgusting. As he discusses how he got rid of the two little girls' bodies, he says he was forced to shove their bodies through an 8-inch hole in those oil tanks. And he says, quote, "I can't believe how easy it was to just drop her and let her go in that hole. And I knew that she was dead when I heard her splash in the oil." He also says how poor sweet little Bella was the only one who put up a fight and how she was begging him not to hurt her. So now all of this new information has come to light and people have a glimpse of the real true Chris Watts, who is a freaking monster. And now it's time to see, okay, well, what was up with this mistress and was she involved? When she revealed herself to the police and to the media, she said, "I barely knew Chris. He completely lied to me. He tricked me. I had no idea. He told me that he was in the middle of a mutual divorce and separation. He never told me that he was still married." And she also says that they were taking it really slow, had no long-term plans, and that it was just kind of a casual thing, and that she is so appalled by what he's done to his family. And people really believed her because she approached the police before they even had to seek her out for questioning. And so they thought she was very forthcoming, that he really had played her as well, and she had no idea of anything that was really going on. And then once she saw it on the news, that's when she called the police. And so they said, "This is a good woman. She didn't know better. He really played her too. She's also been victimized." And that's kind of where it left off with her. She disappeared out of the news circuit. Nobody's really heard from her. She didn't do many interviews. She really tried to retreat from the investigation. And all of the focus just was primarily on Chris and what a horrible person he is. But here is where I started going down that path I told you about in the beginning, where I was uncovering all of this information, because I found out so many details about her that directly implicate her in the murder as well. So let's go through those. Now, as a reminder, Nicole had said to media, to police, to everybody out there, that Chris had told her he was getting a mutual divorce, that there was no ill will between them, and again, that it was a very casual, kind of fleeting relationship, no long-term plans. So then tell me why 3 weeks before the murder, she Googled the phrase, "man I'm having an affair with says he'll leave his wife." Oh, I'm sorry, if they were divorcing, why would you talk about him leaving his wife? I thought you were under the impression that they were already divorcing. You wouldn't be searching something like that. Then on August 4th, she spent 2 hours searching for wedding dresses on Google. 2 hours. You're not gonna search wedding dresses for somebody you're casually dating. On August 8th, 5 days before the murder, she's Googling marrying your mistress. Sounds pretty serious to me. Sounds like you did have some long-term plans there. And what's more, night before the murders, she was Googling how to prepare for anal sex and the anal sex guide, which, I don't know, maybe that was their arrangement of, you get rid of your wife and I'll finally give up my booty to you. I don't know, it is so bizarre. Then we start going into the Google searches that happened after the murders. And here's what police find. She had Googled for hours, Shanann Watts. She had been doing massive research on his wife. She also was searching, do people hate Amber Fry? Which, if you don't know who Amber Fry is, she was Scott Peterson's mistress, and Scott Peterson killed his pregnant wife, Lacey, in 2002. She also, 4 days after the arrest, searched Amber Fry's book deal and Amber Fry's net worth. So clearly the wheels were turning in her head and she was up to something. She's not super innocent like she was trying to say. Further investigation showed she had been searching for, can cops trace text messages? And what's even crazier is these searches for Shanann Watts went all the way back to September 2017, which she told police and told everybody they didn't even meet until June of 2018, and the affair started July 2018. So why would you be searching his wife almost a year prior? My theory, and a lot of other people's theory, is that this affair started a long time ago and they plotted together for a year how to get rid of her. Not only are the searches weird itself for searching for her a year before, but also, hi, you're trying to, again, say it wasn't a long-term relationship, but you're already searching for wedding dresses and marriage after only dating a guy for a month? No, I don't think so. And here comes the smoking gun. Her phone records show a ping from the tower next to Chris's house the morning of the murder at 6 a.m. And all of these internet sleuths have gone through this to basically put together the route from her house to her work, the back roads she could have taken, any other thing, and nothing would have led her to have her phone ping off of that tower. Looking at her phone records, the only other times that her phone had done a ping from that tower happened 3 times in total, and they were all times when she confirmed she was with Chris Watts at his house when Shanann was out of town. So 100% she was at that house, she was nearby. And the theory is, because she did go to work that day, is that she had her phone off the entire time. And when she was far enough away from the house, she turned it on thinking it wouldn't ping, but sorry, bitch, you still were too close to the house because it did ping and it went off and you got caught. So why hasn't she been arrested? Why hasn't there been more investigation into her? And there are a lot of theories out there as to why this is happening, but one of the biggest ones has to do with who her family is. And I don't know if you believe in secret societies or the Illuminati or anything like that, but the theory is that her dad, who is a Freemason, has so many connections that she was basically untouchable. And also, kind of weird, she's in witness protection right now, which usually the mistress, no matter how hated you are in America, you're not getting witness protection and a new name and this whole new life. There's something odd about that. There's a reason that you're completely off the map and off the radar. And also, with all of these phone records, with the Google searches, this is clear evidence that something was afoot and that something's going on. And there's a reason, whatever that reason may be, whether it has to do with her dad and his connections or whatever it is, there is a reason that she has been put in witness protection and she's not being investigated. And I don't know exactly what that reason is, but I do know that she 100% was involved and guilty. And I don't think that Chris would have ever flipped on her, because he still to this day says that he loves Nicole more than anybody in the world, and he's actually borderline obsessed with her if you read some of the letters and the cards that he's written to other people about her energy and all this weird stuff. So he wouldn't give her up and flip on her. He would allow her to go and live this happy life because of how much he loves her. So why hasn't she been investigated? There's got to be a reason, especially with all of this evidence. So I'm interested to know, what do you think? Do you think that it's a pure coincidence and there's a few circumstantial things, but that she's not involved? Do you think, yeah, she 100% is involved and they plotted this together? I know he's a monster and I think she is hands down guilty. So what's your opinion? I'm interested to know. Let me know what you think. Thanks for listening to this case with me. If you like what you heard, please like, comment, share, review, and please subscribe to my channel by clicking that subscribe button below. If you guys have any case recommendations, please email them to me as well. My email is in the description box below. I check that all the time, so please shoot me any recommendations you may have. And until next time, thanks, guys.